back to another new installment of the Two Brandons. This is Brandon Thomas.
And this is Brandon Easton.
And we are back, ladies and gentlemen. And in this this installment, we are going to talk about Arrow. And we're going to talk a little bit about Gotham. Now, stop laughing. See, Easton's already messing it up. Okay, we going too far too soon. Okay, so before we get too far into it, I have to give you some background. There, previous listeners of the show might know that Easton has been a passionate cheerleader for Arrow way back in the day before I had gotten my stuff together and gotten caught up. And I have since done that, thanks to the magic of Netflix and
right.
A couple of productive weeks where I essentially watched like a season and a half of Arrow back to back. So I'm fully caught up. I saw last week's episode pretty much live. So I am fully on board. And I guess based on how quickly I watched the material, you can probably you probably have a good idea of what I'm going to say about it. But my initial impressions of the series, the reason why I didn't jump on the Arrow in the first place was because of Smallville, essentially. Smallville, a show I'm sure a lot of you are familiar with. I think it was on quite a while, 11, 12 years?
10 years.
10 years? Wow, that's a long time. So anyway, I watched Smallville almost from the beginning. I hung in for about 3 or 4 seasons until I realized that the show was just, it was making me angry. Watching the show, I had a friend in college where we just used to watch the show and just like eviscerate it, just pick the thing apart while we were watching it. And eventually I got to the point where that was no longer enjoyable, and it occurred to me that I wasn't enjoying the show. So initially when Arrow started, from the outside, without taking a really, really close look, it looked a lot like Smallville to me. It was like, oh, it's a white guy and some abs, and, you know, it's like, it's a prequel to everything, and whatever. So, initially, I saw it, and I pretty much dismissed it out of hand, without giving it a chance at all. Recently, a couple of months back, I took a long international trip, and I got to watch the first 5 or so episodes of the first season. And a couple of things immediately sprang to mind. The first thing was, this is not Smallville for a variety of reasons.
No.
And and another was that there are an alarming amount of people of color and female characters on this show. And they're actually real characters and real people with their own character arcs and their own problems. You know, no one is perfect, but there are no stereotypical characters or portrayals. So that was one of the first things that I initially picked up on in the first few episodes. I also thought that the action was very well staged and choreographed, especially on a TV budget.
Yeah.
And personally, I have always had a thing about archers. I don't know what it is about archers and bow and arrows. I just, you know, I've always found it incredibly cool. So, you know, anytime somebody comes up with a bow and arrow, I'm pretty much down with it. So after doing the first 5 episodes, I kind of took an extended break. And then when they announced the premiere date for season 3, I decided I was going to try to, you know, watch all these episodes and catch up. And I did. And I loved it. I just think, you know, I think just top to bottom, I think it's a really well orchestrated show. I really like the kind of tweaks and kind of contemporary adjustments they've made to certain continuity elements to kind of make things make a little more sense or make things a little more believable. And I thought it was a great show. And in particular, this we'll get into some spoiler territory too. We're gonna tag this, so
sure,
so we don't so we don't ruin anyone's enjoyment. But I thought that the Deathstroke arc was amazing.
Yep.
Amazing. I love the way, you know, that they kind of set the whole thing up in the first, you know, six or seven episodes of season two. And once it got into it, man, it just rolled. It just rolled for me. And I think I watched maybe 11 or 12 episodes like in a day. I basically finished season two like a couple of Fridays ago. And I loved it. I mean, I love the characters. I love the world. I love just the attention to detail. I like how every season tells its own story, but there are like, you know, 20 stories inside of that season. But I love the way that the seasons, you know, lay the groundwork and build and build. And then all of the things that they've been setting up in the first set of episodes pay off in the end. And I just, I mean, I loved it. I was really, really impressed by it. I know a lot of people warned me that it got a lot better in season two, and I'm sitting around like, oh, I don't know. I loved it in season one. I mean, to me,
it gets a lot better.
You know, the first, I would say like the first moment in the first season where I'm like, damn, was when Oliver confronts his mother, you know, as the Hood.
Yeah.
You know, when he burst through the window and, you know, you have failed this city. I was like, oh! And so, like, basically once I got to that point, so, because I know a lot of people have said that, you know, that they think it starts slow. I disagree with that passionately, but I would encourage people to at least, you know, keep going, even though I guess I've spoiled it for you, to keep going at least until you get, like, halfway through the first season before you kind of make a true determination on it. And that is a comment that's actually going to come back to haunt me in a little bit, but we'll leave that for now. But I would just like to, you know, and I know I was kind of like live, you know, live tweeting like Arrow season two while I was watching.
I remember that.
Quotes,
yes.
And stuff. And you know, I loved it. I had a lot of fun with it. You know, I love the characters. I love the world. I love the diversity. I love that there's a lot of black characters, a lot of female characters. It's not just, you know, like white guys running around looking all cool and doing the cool white guy thing. I think I appreciate the fact that, you know, everyone gets to look like, you get to see everyone as the hero and, you know, make mistakes and evolve. And I loved it. I know you've loved it for a while now, so I'm finally caught up now. I'm finally there with you. So I just wanna, you know, I wanna thank you for encouraging me to give it more of a fair shake. And you know, I'm glad I did.
Well, I mean, you know, I this is not even me trying to say or even suggest I told you so, because everybody has a right to watch what they, you know, what they do and what they don't want to watch. And that's all good, you know? I'm just glad that you gave it a chance, because knowing the type of stuff that you like to read and the stuff you like to watch, mm-hmm. and stuff that we've discussed in heavy detail, I knew you would like Arrow for the simple fact that it effortlessly blends in action into the thematic narrative.
Yep.
So it's not like they just have fight scenes just to have fight scenes. Every moment of action has a real consequence and a reason for existing.
Yep.
And a lot of shows do not achieve that, you know, and I mean even great, you know, past great science fiction and action series, like even like an A-Team or a Knight Rider, or even, you know, early episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation, even they didn't have the narrative focus and drive of Arrow. And that's why I think it has resonated so well with people who don't even read comic books. I mean, the CW formula is very well in place of having extremely attractive people do really cool things. But what made Arrow so different is that it infused everybody with a backstory that made a lot of sense, but everybody had a little bit of darkness in their backstory. Yeah. You know, everybody. And that to me was just like, it was so well done. I mean, stuff that happens with Thea, stuff that happens with Malcolm Merlyn, stuff that happens with the month, with the mom, Moira.
Oh, I love Moira. Moira was one of my favorite characters. I love Moira Queen.
Past tense, exactly. So, you know,
sorry,
that's all right. But no, I mean, you know, we're gonna do spoiler tags. It's all right. Yeah. So the bottom line being that Arrow has achieved what I don't think any other live action DC Comics property thus far, with except me, Flash is a different type of show. But when Arrow dropped, a lot of people were under the impression it was going to be Smallville 2.
Yep.
And I hated Smallville. It was well documented, I'm a big Superman fan. And I didn't like the interpretation that Smallville went into after about season 4. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know what it was trying to be, but it seemed like they were going out of their way to not be Superman. And I thought, if the show's called Smallville and he has the S everywhere, why isn't it Superman?
I mean, you know, the S was on the first promo with him, you know,
tied to the wall. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
With the kryptonite necklace.
Exactly. So, I mean, I don't know what, I mean, I still don't understand the mentality behind the Smallville production staff, because you think Superman, that the Superman shield is one of the most recognizable marketing icons on Earth. You can go anywhere on this planet just about and have the Mickey Mouse symbol and the Superman symbol and the McDonald's arches be recognized by anybody. And you think you would capitalize on the fact that your story is about Superman. And they never did that. And when they did bring up Green Arrow, it was very much like the old boxing glove version of Ollie. Mm-hmm. And that's the one I don't like. I mean, I know a lot of people think that's so cool and silver agey, but I think the idea of putting a boxing glove on the end of an arrow, it doesn't make any goddamn sense, and an arrow won't fly.
Right. I mean, physically, it doesn't make any sense, but...
Yeah, and there you go. So, I decided, based on the first trailer I saw, because he did, you know, and I'm not in the best physical shape, I am working on it, but I saw this dude do something. I saw one of my old baseball teammates did, which is called a salmon leap, which is when you take a bar, like a weight bar, and you put it in between a like a ladder, and you use the bar to rise yourself up over and over again. He did it on the first episode. You don't remember?
Yeah, he's done it a number of times.
Yeah. I mean, that dude, I mean, Stephen Amell is, I mean, the reason I really like him as well is because not only does this dude do most of his own stunts,
right,
but he actually trains in the parkour style every time that you're not seeing him on screen. He's actually off training somewhere. And that dude is busting his behind to look good and also to keep his body in good enough shape to last however long Arrow's going to last.
Right.
Because there's no signs of this show, you know, stopping anytime soon.
No. That's one thing that I hope that – I think that in regards to Smallville, I think that whatever it was they wanted to do or whatever it was they were leading up to, I think was kind of torpedoed by the fact that it went on forever. And I think that that's a trap that Arrow will have to face in the next couple of years. Because, I mean, I think that ideally, you know, if we got 5 or 6 great years of Arrow, you know, I would take that over, you know, 5 great years, 2 okay years, and then 2 shitty years, and then, you know, 1 year where it's just like, put a bullet in this show. So, you know, I think I think part of the nature of the beast is one of the things that that contributes to, you know, kind of the what I think people would say are like the narrative or storytelling failures of some of these shows. So I think that that's something that Arrow will probably have to confront head on in the next couple of years, because, you know, ideally the show shouldn't be on forever. I mean, I think that when you look at and just, you know, just to throw some examples out there, when you look at a show like The Shield or Breaking Bad, I mean, these are shows that benefit, even The Sopranos. I know there's some disagreement about the quality of the last couple years of that show, but I think that, you know, I think that shows need a reasonable end date. I think that when you're telling these mythology rich shows, they just they can't go on forever. Mm. They just can't go on forever because you run out of shit and you basically, you know, you go, shows end up reaching back to the well to find, like, what's the last great thing we did, which is something that 24, which is another one of my favorite shows, fell into. You know, if you notice, anytime in those later seasons of 24 that they kind of get stuck somewhere, they're like, let's bring back something from season 5.
Or like bring back Tony. Let's bring back Tony.
Right. Let's bring back President Logan. It's like, come on, man. Come right. on. And, right. you know, I don't want them to get to that point, especially now, because, you know, it's really early and I feel so great about the show and I feel so I'm anticipating like the complete series set for Arrow already. Like,
yeah, okay, if we absolutely, could get, like, yes.
6 or 7 seasons in a cool box, you know, I'll be good. So, you know, I'm still in that kind of, I'm still kind of in that mode in regards right. to the show. So I just, you know, I'm enjoying it, but I just know that even if that show continues past its kind of, you know, kind of a reasonable expiration date,
like its natural cycle,
right? I think that some of these same problems that a lot of people have with, you know, shows like Smallville and X-Files and
Supernatural.
I'm not really into Supernatural, but
neither am I. But people who I know who love it said it should have ended like 3 seasons ago.
Yeah. Yeah, it does seem to be, it's like, this show is still on? Like, what's still happening? I mean, Buffy's a great example. 7 yeah. seasons, that was perfect. I mean, there is some, you know, kind of quality up and down, with which happens with most shows. But, you know, 7 seasons, even Angel was 5 seasons, you know.
Oh, man, that ended too soon, though.
I know. But that last season, is just immaculate. I just, you know, I love that. I love that final season and that final episode.
Dude, the last 5 minutes of Angel is probably the last 5 minutes of any TV show ever. Seriously.
Yep.
I mean, literally, I've never seen a show end like that in my life.
Not Fade Away. Is a yep. perfect title, a perfect ending. So that's the kind of thing that I, you know, that I imagine for Arrow. That's the type of kind of format I would like to see them embrace instead of, you know, running the thing and into the ground. You know, I would rather see the entire, you know, creative team like pick up and do another show, you know, for another 4 or 5 years than to do one show and just right. run it into the ground. But, you know, this is all speculation. We don't know what's going to happen. That might not happen. But for now, I mean, I love the show. I mean, I love, you know, a lot of the characters. I would say there are probably maybe 1 or 2 characters on the show that I don't really, really enjoy. But I like, you know, Detective. I guess he's now Captain Lance.
Captain Lance, yeah.
I loved Moira Queen. Oh, I love Moira Queen. I thought her character and her arc, I thought it was so complicated and so kind of like narratively rich.
Yeah, and, well executed.
I love John Diggle.
Oh, I man, don't even be starting on Diggle, bro. Say about that, man, I tell you. I mean, you know, you brought up a great point when you say, well, I'll let you finish, and I'll talk about the Angel comparisons to Arrow.
Oh, okay. But, man, I love John. I even like Roy. I love Felicity. And they're doing some really, you know, I think the next arc of Thea Queen's story is going to be, you know, really, really awesome. I love Sarah, even though, you know.
Yeah, don't get me started. Oh, my God. I have so much to say. Okay.
I think she's coming back too. Nisa Al Ghul.
Yeah. Well, I call her Talia, but everybody.
She is Talia, but they can't use Talia.
They can't use Talia, sadly.
So they had to give her, you know. Give him another daughter. Oh, and this is also, you know, random speculation, but just based on some of the comments that were made by the Arrow cast and crew at the New York Comic Con panel about Arrow, mm-hmm. they said that, you know, they joked that Stephen Amell has a big shirtless fight scene a big shirtless sword fight at the end of like episode 9 or 10 of this
wow.
season. And I bet you know what that is, right?
Yeah, that's the Neil Adams redo.
I almost guarantee you that's going to be like the Neil Adams Batman, you know, racial
fighting Ra's al Ghul sword fight. Yep. That was one of the they actually did that on Batman the Animated Series, if you remember.
Yes, they did.
Yep. Which blew my mind because I never thought I would see
episodes.
That.
Episodes, great episodes.
Well, let's see now. Well, no, I mean Angel. I think people have to understand how incredible of a show that Josh Whedon created. Angel, I feel, was the pure distilled Josh Whedon look at the universe mm-hmm. about having to grow up. And the most amazing part about Angel, and I still watch it every now and then, is that each season, everybody is different. They grow based on everything that happened in the previous year. They're not the same people as the first episode of Angel. And that's something I always say about great television or great anything. The first scene with all your main characters, watch it. And then watch the final scene. If they're the exact same, the show failed.
Yep.
Angel was just revolutionary in his treatment of character. Because Josh Whedon and his staff, it wasn't just him, it was Jane Espenson, and it was a David Greenwalt. All those people really came up with some astonishing stories to really force characters into an uncomfortable place all of the time. Yep. And that is that is vitally important for quality storytelling. So when you look at Arrow,
same way.
A lot of ways, it's the same thing. You know, Oliver starts off one way, yep. and by episode 15 of season 1, he is nothing like that first scene you saw him in.
Nope.
And then when you get to the season finale of season 1, the whole universe has changed, literally. Yep. I mean, it's basically no man's land.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Then season 2 starts, and they introduce the greater DC Comics universe into the Arrow world.
Mm-hmm.
Slowly but surely, whether it be Solomon Grundy or Deathstroke the Terminator or The Flash
yep.
or Black Canary or the League of Shadows or League of Assassins, whatever they're calling them on Arrow. It's just a really well done superhero TV show in a world where superhero TV shows generally have never done well. You know, Smallville was an aberration, and Smallville became a soap opera for girls who just liked Tom Welling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the old Flash show was absolutely horrible. The one from 19... I mean, I remember watching that the day it came on, and I got really mad because I was like, this is horrible. Like, this is just bad. There was a failed Justice League pilot from 1989 that you can still find making the rounds at conventions. It is based on the... McGuire, creators on that?
Keith Giffen.
The Giffen and McGuire years. Yeah, mm-hmm. The Keith Giffen and J.M. DeMatteis. Mm-hmm. They did a Justice League pilot based on their stories, and it was almost like a sitcom, but it was one of the worst things ever made. So, superhero TV shows either end up as thoughtful remembrances of times past, or they just get canceled the first day. And the original Flash show should have got canceled after the first episode and a bunch of other stuff, too. But Arrow managed to basically take the Chris Nolan universe and drop Green Arrow into it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically what it is. I mean, I hear the joke. I have friends, believe it or not, who work on Arrow and the Flash. And they tell me they call it Bad Arrow because it's basically the Chris Nolan verse, but on television.
Right.
And of all the superhero universes that exist, the only one in my mind that could work is the Chris Nolan stuff, because as we've seen, the Marvel Cinematic Universe does not translate well to television.
No.
You know, at least not broadcast TV. I think right. Netflix or HBO would be perfect.
I'm crossing my fingers for that.
You know what I really want? I want a Punisher show on like Showtime. Like NC-17 Punisher, where you just have Frank Castle being the angel of death that he is. That would be the greatest show of all time.
I mean, I imagine that, The Punisher is probably on their short list
for
wave two of Netflix stuff.
I think
that Punisher, I believe that Blade would work great.
Yes.
Even though, they've done movies, and there was, you know, that short-lived Blade TV show on Spike.
Ooh, that they, with Sticky Fingers.
Yeah. But, you know, I would almost bet that The Punisher is probably on their short list of things to do for phase two of their Netflix deal. Presuming the first phase goes well, and it probably will. It'll go well enough to continue. But yeah. Another thing that I love about Arrow is that, you know, like you referenced the season finale,
yes,
of the first season. I love the fact that even when he wins, he loses. And
right.
It's very engaging, and it's very what I think realistic. And I think that I've heard some people, and I don't want to digress too far off the mark,
sure.
But I've heard a lot of people compare The Dark Knight Rises to season two of Arrow, because you know the stories are pretty similar. Now the advantage that Arrow has is more hours of content, right? So all of the episodes don't have to have like this perfect ending that everything has been kind of wrapped up in a bow and leave the audience feeling like, oh, well, everything's gonna be okay. You know, when you're doing a TV show, you don't have to do that because you know there are always more episodes. And I think that creatively that's allowed them, you know, the freedom to do something like that, the freedom to flatten half of Oliver City and, you know, and continue on into the next season. Because, I mean, even though it's like even when he wins, he loses. And I just love that. And it's a way to the characters always have pressure on them. There is always some kind of external pressure, external and internal pressure on them that's changing their relationships continuously. And I just think they do a really great job of, you know, keeping everything straight. I mean, it seems pretty clear to me that they do a lot of planning before
yes.
they actually sit down and
yeah.
script out all of the episodes. The way the story evolves, you can just tell that, you know, they have like a really good plan in place, and then, you know, and they go out there and they execute it. And I did enjoy season two a little more than season one, but
right.
the reason why season two was so awesome was because of season one, because of groundwork they had laid,
yeah.
you know, between Oliver and Slade and Shadow. And
especially with Slade.
What?
Especially with Slade.
Yeah, especially with Slade. And you knew it. I mean, it's because, you know, comic fans know that, you know, Slade Wilson is Deathstroke. And, you know, I think that most people had the... Well, based on, you know, one of the first images of the pilot, which is like the Deathstroke
mask
with the arrow through it, you know that this relationship is you know, is going to go horribly wrong. And as soon as you see Oliver hooking up with Shadow, you're like... Oh, that's what happens. And it makes perfect sense. It's like, so of course, you know, this is all, you know, this is over a woman, you know, this like deep seated animosity, kind of the kernel of it started, you know, over this girl that they were both interested in. So, I mean, I just think it, I just think they've done a fantastic job with it. I think, you know, they should be very proud of it. And I think that it is one of the few kind of DC media products, past the cartoons, mind you, one of the
right.
few like live action DC products that I believe is of superior quality. I mean, because... And we'll get to this in a second. I mean, comparing Arrow to Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is just, it's embarrassing. Like, I mean, it
yep.
almost feels bad, like, saying those two shows in the same sentence. Like, that's how far away they are, to me, you know, in regards to, you know, the things they do well and the things they can improve on. So, you know, that said, we'll get to the second part of this episode, which is about the recently launched Fox show Gotham, which,
yes.
you know, as all I'm sure most of you know, is a yet another prequel focusing on Jim Gordon's early days as a detective in Gotham City, which is the most corrupt city on the face of the earth. So before we get too deep into it, I'll just let you know that I personally hate the show. I can't say anything. Saying anything other than that would be disingenuous and dishonest. I mean, as much as I love Arrow and think that it's, you know, one of the best things that one of the best live action products that DC Entertainment has produced, I feel just as strongly that Gotham is just a train wreck of epic proportions. And, you know, I'll say this. I watched 3 episodes, and we're going to get into that a little later, too. But without this turning into a, you know, a laundry list of things.
Well.
Well, I'll try not to turn it into a laundry list. Okay. First of all, I want to admit to a mistake, right? Okay. So before I saw the Gotham pilot, you know, I thought it would be a great idea to reread the classic Gotham Central run of comics, written by Greg Rucka and Ed Brubaker, at times separately, at times together, drawn by Michael Lark, did a lot of the artwork. A couple other great artists did some fill-ins now and then. I think Jason Alexander did some stuff, Kano. But anyway, it is a classic. It's about 40 issue. It's a series basically about, you know, the cops in Gotham and them interacting with Batman's world and just kind of the internal politics of a kind of police department that is beset with people that like to dress up in costumes and do damage to normal people. And Gotham Central is one of my favorite runs of comics ever. I think it's phenomenal. And every time I read it again, I find a different reason to love it. So, you know, I kind of have that impression, that interpretation of Gotham or Gotham Central is kind of in my head when I go into the pilot for Gotham. And to say that they're different is an understatement. And I think that it was a huge missed opportunity. I think that here's, you know, a relatively small run of comics that basically presents a blueprint on how to do it, how to make it cool, how to make it real, how to make it grounded. And I did not find Gotham to be any of that. I thought that the look and the feel and the tone of the show was way, way, way to fuck off. It irritates me that everybody looks like a goddamn model on the show. It's like, why does Renee Montoya look like she just stepped off the runway? Like, why is Jim Gordon dating a model? I mean, even Chris Allen is like better looking than he's supposed to be.
Right.
And yeah. I just did, just from sight, I'm like, I don't know how this is gonna go. And once I dug into it, I did not like it at all. I thought it was a pretty bad show. I thought that the scripts and the stories were pretty mediocre. And I essentially gave up on it after 3 episodes. Now, for comparison's sake, I'm still watching Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., though I'm not excited about doing it.
Right.
But I have somehow maintained, you know, like some kind of distant relationship with that show. Mm-hmm. But after a few episodes of Gotham, I'm like, no, I'm done with this. I mean, I think for me, the scene where I was like, yeah, I'm not gonna like this show, is that goofy shitty scene where Leatherface is about to kill Jim Gordon and Harvey Bullock hanging upside down in the meat locker. And I'm like, nah, man, I'm not gonna be into this. And, you know, it's the thing is that, and like I said this, you know, is going to come back to haunt me. I only gave the show 3 episodes, and I'm right. only willing to give the show 3 episodes because in my perspective, I think that the show right now is so bad that it would be hard for it to recover and turn into something that wouldn't aggravate me watching it. And just from those first 3 episodes, I'm like, man, I can't get into this. I mean, it aggravates me how everything is connected, how Selena Kyle witnesses the Wayne's murder, how Jim Gordon's father used to be a DA in Gotham. And I'm pretty sure that's just some shit they made up. Like, that's not from the comics, you know, at all. I think that the corruption inside the Gotham Police Department and the Gotham political machine, I think, is cartoonish. I mean, once you have, like, this kind of bumbling, kind of miscast Gotham mayor that's talking about, you know, sending the homeless children, you know, off to, like, the farm or whatever. It's just like, come on, man. This is not... To me, it's just right now, it just feels like a hugely missed opportunity. And then another thing, I'll tell you, you know, kind of like the central reason why. I know a lot of people that have complained about the show have referenced, I can't remember the kid's name. The guy that plays young Jim Gordon, they have kind of referenced him as kind of the quote unquote problem with the show, or like, this is why the show doesn't work, which I think is complete nonsense, because the same actor was on Southland, a show about realistic show about cops and about policing set in LA. And that show was tremendous. The writing on that show was phenomenal. And the character, that actor played a believable cop on that show that was kind of on, you know, the edge of kind of the moral line. And it was so much better than, you know, what we've gotten to see from him in this role as Detective Jim Gordon. And so I think that that's proof. Comparing Gotham to Southland is another thing, which I think is just, you know, sad and embarrassing. But I you know, I don't believe it's that actor's fault at all. You know,
no.
I don't give a damn he was on the OC like 20 years ago or whatever. You know, if you give that actor like a, you know, like a good script and tell him to go out there and, you know, and be a cop, and there's like a real kind of realistic, grounded, believable story at the core, it's gonna work. And right now for me, Gotham is just not working. To me, it's essentially like Smallville in Gotham. You know, there's like, I think it's the second episode where every time they would transition between scenes, they would do this same like generic, like external shot of Gotham panning by the camera. And it's like, man, if they use that transition shot one more time. I'm gonna just turn this off right now. So I know you feel, you know, a little differently about, I don't know how different, but, you know.
Well, I mean, okay, everything you said, there is a certain level of validity to what you're saying. The way I look at Gotham is sort of how I looked at Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. in the very beginning. I was trying to give it at least 10 episodes before I make my mind up. Now, I don't hate the show anywhere near as much as you hate the show. Not by a long shot.
Okay.
I'm still giving it a chance. However, my problem with Gotham really does rest in the actual concept as opposed to his execution. I felt since the very beginning, instead of doing a 12-year lead-in to Batman, you should have done a 5-year lead-in to Batman. In the sense that you would get probably a 17-year-old Bruce who returns to Gotham from wherever it is he went. And you kind of have the same setup as year one, but you do it from Jim Gordon's perspective as opposed to Bruce's, like the actual You know, like the original Batman Year One comic book by Frank Miller and David Mazzucchelli, whatever his name was.
Yeah, Mazzucchelli.
Mm. Yeah, there you go. So I always felt that Gotham should be Gotham negative one. I mean, sorry, Batman Begins negative five. Mm-hmm. You know, where each season, let's say the show gets a 5-year, you know, run, by the end of the fifth season, you would have Batman appear in Gotham. Now, the show wouldn't change and shift to being the story about Batman, but with Batman running around in the background, you still have the ability to generate new audiences, and you have the chance to create synergy with the DC Cinematic Universe. It's clear they haven't thought that far in advance.
I don't think they're at all interested in that.
No, and you can tell. And my other real critique, and my only real critique, was that I don't like this thing where they kind of roll the dice every episode and see if you can guess which villain that is. You know, like, the first episode had Penguin, Poison Ivy, Catwoman, and possibly the Joker. Because they said because the producers said that the Joker may show up in almost every episode, and you got to figure out which guy is going to be the Joker. And I'm like, I'm not doing that.
Because I don't care.
I just don't have enough energy.
Because the core of the show is not interesting enough. Like, it can't just be, you know, spot the cameo. That was another thing that
irritated me. Which is what it turned into.
Right. That's another thing that irritated me about the pilot. The fact that it was just winking at the audience, like, every 3 seconds.
Oh, and the Riddler, yeah.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, you know, like, first of all, I don't know why they renamed Pamela Isley Ivy Pepper, because you know, clearly people are stupid and they're not gonna know who that character is unless you put her damn name.
The crazy shit about it was that they had her sitting around a bunch of plants.
Right.
I'm like, I fucking get it. Yeah, I know who that's supposed to be, guys. I do know.
You know what it is? You know what it is? It's like, it is so very obvious that this is a show that's made by people that don't read comics, that don't have a lot of information or kind of understanding of comics. Because to me, it really comes off as people that really don't know the Batman comics thinking that they're doing, like, these really cool, clever winks at the comics, you know, comics audience, but really not understanding that they're doing it with no subtlety and no nuance at all. And, you know, I'm glad you said something about the pilot being overstuffed. To me, that's actually a critique of a lot of pilots. I don't know where we got this thing where every single element of a show has to be introduced in the first, like, 40 minutes. Otherwise, you can't get people to watch it. Now, here's a great example. I know it's, you know, old, and maybe people don't, you know, respect it or love it anymore. But I'll tell you one thing. You know what show, like, from the early 90s had a phenomenal pilot that gave you just enough of the larger universe without having to introduce every single character or concept that was going to show up? The X-Files. Go watch that first episode of The X-Files. Like, if you really look at it, that pilot is just about Mulder, Scully, and the possibility of a government conspiracy.
Right.
They didn't introduce, you know, I mean, we did see the cigarette smoking
for
man
a second
in passing for a second, and maybe he said, like, a line or two. I can't even remember if he had any dialogue.
No, he didn't say nothing. He was just, I remember that episode. He was standing on the side and people were talking, and I think Scully takes a really cautious look over her shoulder, and she's like unnerved by him.
Right.
But that says everything you need to know.
At the very end of the episode, we see him walk the evidence into, like, you know, the Raiders of the Lost Ark room, you know, that has, like, the shelves with all of this secret shit that the government has been hiding from the public. And, you know, there's just no kind of, there's no pay in it. You know, Gotham is not the only culprit, but I've seen, like, a lot of pilots in the last couple of years that are just like, are there 15 characters on the show? We have to introduce all of them in the first 40 minutes. Otherwise, people aren't going to want to watch the show. It's like, to be honest, there should have been, you know, maybe Penguin, maybe Fish Mooney, which I think is
who is Fish?
No.
Does she exist?
No, she doesn't exist.
I never heard of this character.
I think that is one of the most horrible made-up black names for a character that I've ever seen in everything. You know what? When I heard that character's name, Fish Mooney, you know what that made me think of? That made me think of Will Smith's character from I, Robot. His name was Dell Spooner. And I thought it was like the laziest, shittiest name that I had ever heard for any black character.
And, at least it wasn't Washington Jackson.
Oh my God. But anyway, Fish Mooney, I think, is, you know, is on the same line as, you know, as Dell Spooner to me. And to me, that pilot, you know, it should have been about the Wayne murder, and that's it. It shouldn't have been this whole side, you know, this whole like side show with, you know, a lot of scenes with Fish and a lot of scenes with, you know, Junior Penguin. And, oh, hey, look, the Riddler shows
up. The Riddler shows up, right.
You know, and he works in the police department. And that set is just like laughable. It's just like, what police station on earth just looks like this? It's like, hey, let's just take, like, you know, an empty room and you like put a bunch of desks in it and have like a walkway that what
it feels very rushed. The show itself feels extremely rushed.
It could be that.
And I'll tell you what it is, and a lot of it has to do, and this is behind the scenes stuff, a lot of it has to do with the fact that Warner Brothers wanted to get these shows on the air to generate interest for their new DC anime, I mean DC cinematic universe. Mm-hmm. So I feel that a lot of the development that should have went into, first of all, world design, secondly, character design, and thirdly, overall story arcs, I feel like they kind of jumped past that just to get the show on the air. It feels that way.
Well, not even that. I mean, look at what they're doing with the cinematic universe. It's like, when I see their slate of films, I just like one word.
Yeah, I'm not happy about this either.
One word comes to mind. Cheater. Cheater, cheater, cheater. It's like DC and Warner Brothers, they want that Avengers money so bad.
So bad.
But they don't have they don't want to have to do any of the groundwork. It's like the Avengers didn't make $1 billion because it was a bunch of superheroes in a movie. It made $1 billion because they built up to the Avengers over 3 or 4 years, over several solo movies that built up to the Avengers. They didn't just start at Justice League and just say, you know, give me my paper, which is basically what DC is doing.
And that's why Batman v Superman is going to be such a problem. As I keep saying, now that they released the plot, you know, the plot's going to be Superman's an evil alien, and here comes a human in body armor that's going to beat him somehow. Like, that's not a God Almighty, man.
Okay,
come on.
Look, about that, I just think it's hilarious that DC has scheduled all these movies to 2020, and Superman still can't get his own movie.
Yeah.
It's like, why are they so allergic to doing Man of Steel 2?
Because they want to jumpstart and make the Avengers money. That's what it is. I mean, you know, I think that there was no reason to do Batman versus Superman. I think that we need a Superman movie where he's not a psychopathic killer. We need a Superman movie that you get to be closer to at least a comic book version on some level, in a very small way, you know. We need to have a Wonder Woman movie that's not shoehorned in.
Right.
You know, I don't like the fact that they're going to do a Wonder Woman movie that's just kind of putting it out there. Because we got to have that movie. It's like, come on, man. This is all, a lot of these DC movies are going to flop.
And you know what? I'll be the one to say it. I'm sure, like, you know, a lot of people don't want to say it, but I'll say it. Cyborg doesn't deserve his own movie.
Of course he doesn't. Most people don't even know who Cyborg is. How are you going to have a movie with a black lead character that's mainly covered in robotic parts that nobody knows about? I mean, seriously, you might as well give, you know, what was it, the black dude, Rocket Racer, you know, in Marvel. You know, you got to give Rocket Racer his own, you know, and then, you know, if Marvel did it, it'd probably be good, you know, but you give a movie to DC and it's like, oh, well, let's just put anybody in anything and see what sticks. And I'm like, come on, man. Right. And then you also have Star Wars movies coming out. I mean, DC waited too long to get this started.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I don't know, bro.
And you know what? Even though they kind of started at the end of the line, there was a way to build this in a way that made sense. A lot more sense than going from Man of Steel to Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice, and then obnoxiously cutting. It's like, You can't cut the fucking Justice League movie into two parts just because.
Oh, so we're going to have The Hobbit all over again. A movie that could have been told in 1 2-hour movie is going to be spread across 6 hours, probably.
It's like, you can't do that. It's like, look, all right, you know, the Harry Potter thing, the Hunger Games thing, you know what? Splitting the books into two is kind of irritating. It's kind of obnoxious. A big, you know, primary driver of that is money, clearly.
Yes.
However, you could do that with the last movie, right? You know, if you put out 5 or 6 movies and you get to the last one and be like, you know what? This book is really huge. This thing really makes a lot of money. Let's see if we can find an interesting way to split this movie into two parts. And, you know, first of all, get a little extra money out of it. Keep this thing going for a little longer. And maybe we'll be able to put more of the book in the actual movie and not have it be 4 hours long like, you know, Return of the King. You can't do that with the first movie.
No, you cannot. Have
Justice League Part 1 and 2. It's like,
Batman, both of them will be 3 hours long.
Batman v Superman is Justice League Part 1.
Pretty much. Yep.
So it's like Justice League half, Justice League Part 1, and then Justice League Part 2. And oh, by the way, we gonna put out an Aquaman movie. Like, I don't
again,
know about that.
You
know
again, what? The only people that are gonna go see that are people who like Game of Thrones.
I mean, look, I haven't seen Game of Thrones. That
Jason Momoa played a very major character.
Right.
In Game of Thrones, who basically they're going to turn Aquaman from Aquaman into Aquaman the Sea Barbarian.
Right. Which I think is a great idea. It doesn't mean that he could have his own movie.
It could work, but I think, my whole objection to everything is that they haven't outlined anything for a DC universe. When Iron Man 1 came out, the best Iron Man movie of them all, you know, they made it a point to kind of ground everything in a scientifically based universe that can be explained, you know. Right. And at the very end, in the very, very first post-credit sequence, you know, Nick Fury shows up, the Sam Jackson version, and says, you know, you're a part of a larger universe. We're going to do the Avengers Initiative. Bam, fade to black. Everyone was like, what?
Right.
You know? I mean, I remember in the theater, everybody was like, like you heard the inhalation of like 700 people, you know? And this was, I was living in New York at the time. So we've got that, number one, okay? Then you have Superman, or you have the Batman trilogy that should have actually laid the seeds
right
for a future Justice League universe.
Right.
They had every goddamn opportunity in the world to set that up. And they didn't do it because Chris Nolan wanted to do his own thing. God bless him.
Which now, is fine, but right. Warner Brothers could have still right. come done afterwards something. And said, hey, right. you know what? We appreciate that Chris wanted to have this very specific vision of Batman. However, we're going to make that basically the groundwork for this universe that we're building. Right. If they had just said, hey, you know what? All of that Nolan shit happened, but I tell you what, we're going to set our universe like 10 years after that. Batman's going to be older, played by a different actor, which
exactly
happened before, and we're just gonna continue on.
Exactly. That should have happened. Now, that didn't happen, so let's jump ahead to Man of Steel. At some point in Man of Steel, when he wasn't blowing up buildings, they should have had some kind of reference other than like the Wayne Tech satellite or LexCorp oil tankers that also blow up. Right. They could have done something. They could have made a reference to Themyscira, or whatever that place is called, where Wonder Woman's actually from. They could have done something with the military having an actual conversation with Lex Luthor, but that would have involved creative planning, you know, and creative casting as well. So we have all that. So the movie ends. There's no post-credit sequence in Man of Steel at all, which is strange.
No.
And then, I mean, you could have done so many things. You could have had you could have had a scene with the military talking about the Atlantean threat. At first, we've been dealing with Atlantis all these years. Now we have to deal with this alien from outer space. What's next? You know, and you could say, well, we could talk to Mr. Wayne, fade to black.
Right.
You know, because he's a weapons man. Technically, you know, Wayne Enterprises makes weapons. They do. Like, they've always kind of covered over that. But Wayne makes weapons. He's just like Tony Stark as well. You know, I don't know why they don't ever talk about the fact that Wayne Tech makes weapons for the military. Like, that's something that's kind of like...
They kind of hinted at it. You know, they kind of, you know, reference that in Batman Begins. But
yeah, but I mean, even really... in the comic books, like, Wayne Tech makes weapons. Mm-hmm. And Luthor even... I remember there was an issue... it was one of these issues recently, you know, when Luthor, you know, lost his mind and was wearing a green outfit again. And he says something about how Bruce Wayne was, like, he says Bruce Wayne a hypocrite because he says one thing, but he also makes weapons. Mm. You know, and I'm like, hey, that's true. And, you know, they never talk about that in the comics. But, you know, I'm just thinking to myself, a scene where you could have introduced all that stuff in one conversation that didn't seem shoehorned in. You know, now they're shoehorning entire franchises in.
Yes.
You know, it doesn't feel like this good planning. I'm not one of those fans that just needs everything from me. But it's like, if you're going to get our money, you know, I don't want to go through another Man of Steel experience where half the movie's good and the other half is just nonsense. You know, because that's the problem. Like, you know, half of Man of Steel had some merit to it. It felt like a Superman movie. And the other half was just like shit blowing up. And I'm like, whoa, I mean, you could do that. But, you know, even Superman 2, the old one, you know, the old Richard Donner one that, you know, was re-edited or whatever. The whole film was about the fact that Clark was tired of lying to Lois. And he really wanted to have that human touch finally. So he gave up who he was to get laid, basically. You know, any guy in the world can, you know, can relate to that. You know? Like, some in the
that's
past, especially when guys are, especially when guys are younger, they give up a lot of the wrong things just to get laid. Hey, I get it. Now, in the movie, of course, Superman 2, he blows up, they destroy Manhattan or Metropolis or whatever, but then he realizes, hey, I'm tearing up Manhattan or Metropolis. I should probably take the battle somewhere else. And he does. And I'm like, okay, that makes perfect sense. You know, it would have been nice in Man of Steel, we talked about this, if that would have happened, but it didn't. But you still have a way to set up the DC universe somehow, and they missed that opportunity completely in Man of Steel. And I don't know what else to do about it. It's like, you know, what are they going to do? Like, how you when this Batman versus Superman nonsense comes out, they really better set up this world correctly, or else, because if this movie doesn't set it up, nothing else that follows is going to make any sense.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So they better work overtime.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think they are. I mean, the movie doesn't come out till 2016, so I think they're definitely. I think they are working overtime. So
yeah, they moved it, right?
They have a really good script, and that's how you know. That's how I feel about a lot of this stuff. But I mean, they have to have a really great script in order to introduce a new Batman and try to ignore all of the Nolan stuff. Deal with the world in the wake of, you know, the destruction of Metropolis, introduce Lex Luthor and set up, you know, whatever relationship Lex and Clark had, you know, because they'll probably have known each other or been kids together or blah, 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 because, you know, that's a very contemporary interpretation and it can work when it's done well. Right. And then, I mean, just who knows how many villains... I just like, are we going to look up and there's going to be like four villains like in Batman v Superman? I mean, it would be nice if it was Lex Luthor and maybe one other guy that could actually hit Superman, that could physically, you know, damage
Metallo.
Superman. It could be Metallo. That's a good, I mean, it sounds like they're using Brainiac for.
Are they really?
Well, for Justice League, that's kind of word on the street that they're using Brainiac. And the only reason they're probably doing that is because Marvel is doing Thanos, and they don't want the Thanos
Dark Side comparisons.
So I think that that's smart. I think that Brainiac's a cool villain if you do him right. But the thing is, you know, Avengers is also doing Ultron. So if Avengers kills with, you know, Ultron, which it probably will, then, you know, it'll be interesting to see what adjustments they're going to have to make to Brainiac. You know, so it's not just like another, you know, out of control AI. You know, I think that if they can give Brainiac, you know, if they give him some Krypton connection, which they'll probably do because everything needs to, you know, be connected now. Right. I think that that'll kind of help them out a little bit. But, I mean, I just... when I saw that slate of films, you know, I'm like, they're really trying to go through with this. Like, they really, and the strength, the thing that DC is doing the best right now are their TV shows. And they're completely ignoring and disavowing the TV shows in order. Like, seriously, there's no reason in the world why, you know, Stephen Amell shouldn't at least have like a little cameo or something. You know, like I can understand if they don't want to try to, you know, basically continue Arrow in a movie or something like that. But, you know, I think that, you know, recasting The Flash, I think, is the only thing that, and you know, we don't know exactly what they're going to do. But if they use Wally West for the cinematic universe, which they're not going to do because, you know, they're trying to pretend that those characters don't exist. I think that the only reason they should have recast the Flash, not recast him, but cast another actor to play the Flash in the movies is because it's a different Flash. I think that it's going to be, you know, kind of silly to have two, you know, two white dudes around the same age, both playing Barry Allen. One's on TV.
It doesn't make sense, dude. So this Grant Gustin, to me, like in two episodes of The Flash that I've seen, Grant Gustin to me has been the best Barry Allen live action I've ever seen. Period. This guy has it right.
Yep. And it could have, you know, it, I'm sure a lot of it was that, you know, they didn't want to have to rely on the TV show. They didn't know if the TV show was going to hit like it did. But, I mean, I know we have gotten, like, way off the main point, but I just, when I see that slate of upcoming films, it's like, yeah, I'll believe that when I see it. It's kind of like when you see the slate of films that Sony has put out for Spider-Man, where they're like, oh, yeah, we're going to do Sinister Six, and then Spider-Man 3 and 4 shot together, or what, like, what? All right, good luck with that. Because, I mean, I saw Amazing Spider-Man 2, and that shit was terrible. It was terrible. I think it's one of the most...
I haven't seen it yet.
It's horrible. You should just watch it on DVD, just, you know, just because I thought it was terrible. I thought it was terrible. And it's funny to me how, in the worst part of the movie, the worst part of these two recent Spider-Man reboots have been the villains. So I think it is laughable that they're going to try to make an all villain movie. It's like, you can't even Sinister make
Six, right?
You can't even make the villains work when they're by themselves. Like, how are you going to, I mean, how are you going to do it? And then like, I guess, you know, cause DC has a, you know, like a Suicide Squad movie they're putting together and they're like, we're trying to get Will Smith and Tom Hardy. And it's like, well, you better, because otherwise, nobody's going to be interested in that.
Speaking of Suicide Squad, you know, Arrow did it better than anybody I could have imagined.
Yeah,
I mean,
it was awesome.
The use of Amanda Waller, the use of Deadshot, who Deadshot could be the dumbest looking character in the universe, but they found a way to make it work in live action on a TV budget.
And you know why? And again, do you know why that worked? Because they didn't cheat, because Deadshot had already been introduced. Diggle had already been introduced.
Right.
Basically, all of those characters that were in the Suicide Squad had already appeared in the show.
Absolutely.
They didn't just wait until the Suicide Squad episode and try to introduce six new characters in 40 minutes and then be done with them. And then, when you watch the show, and then in that kind of arc, I don't know if it was, you know, that actual episode, but in that arc, they introduce this idea that Amanda Waller and Oliver Queen know each other.
Exactly.
And it's like, how the fuck do they know each other? I don't think they dealt with
that. We'll get to that eventually.
And then you get to the end of season two, and it's like, oh!
Hong Kong, baby!
So, yeah, man, but, I mean, at the end of the day, I'm glad it went back to that. At the end of the day, Arrow is great. I think Gotham is awful, but it can improve. And if I hear, you know, if I hear word that it is improving, you know, maybe I'll give it another shot. And I really do hate giving up on shows so early. I really try not to. I try not to give up on shows and comics, you know. I try not to drop the hammer on them too early, but I think, you know, I think Gotham deserved it, basically.
Well, I tell you, bro, the thing that way, this is how you save Gotham. You stop trying to make it Batman year negative 12, and what you do is concentrate on a relationship between Bullock and Gordon. I think there's a gold mine of potential there. And if you keep ignoring it, which they've done so far, they get into these little lover spats that don't really get into the core of who Bullock is.
Oh my God, I'm glad you said that.
You know what I mean? I think that you could really get into the redemption of Bullock from being a bruised and damaged, corrupt cop into being almost a hero. Right. And I don't see them really doing that. Like they kind of want Bullock to kind of be the dark guy who he constantly is arguing with and munches cigars and doesn't want to follow procedure. And it's like, come on, how many times have we seen that? You know, that was called Hunter. That was a show on NBC called Hunter. Before that, there was a show called Starsky and Hutch. You know, I mean, it was Beretta. I mean, I'm tired of seeing cops being portrayed this way. And in the Gotham Central universe, which is what this really should be, they have to give these people a little bit more than two-dimensional motivations. You know, Bullock should have a reason why he's corrupt. Cops just don't get up in the morning and say, hey, I think I'm just going to take some money on the side and ignore some stuff. No, something has to happen for you to decide to go against your morals and your oath and your vow, you know? And maybe we could have maybe, you know, Bullock's kid got sold into sex slavery and the only way to get him out was for him to do a favor for, you know, Falcone. You know, that to me would be awesome because it gives you a whole different level of interaction. But just to make him be corrupt for the sake of, you know, being corrupt.
He's just comically corrupt.
Yeah, for no reason. And I think that the best characters are the ones who are slightly damaged for a reason. And then when you correct that, therein lies the drama. Right. So if they continue to ignore Bullock and Gordon's relationship, which they've done, if they continue to try to make Alfred into being this complete asshole who beats up on Bruce.
Yes.
You know, like,
I didn't mention that. But
you know, if they continue to do this, then I will stop watching because I don't first. And then, you know, Jada Pinkett. You know, I can take her or leave her. I mean, I know she's from my hometown, and I used to have a huge crush on her. But her roles have just gotten worse and worse. Either that or her acting has gotten worse and worse. I don't know what's going on with her. But she doesn't belong in the show. If you want to put a black person in it, go get black. Find the guy who becomes Black Manta and put him in the show. You know, I would do that. But that's called planning, though.
I think Jada could be in the show. She shouldn't be playing a character named Fish Mooney, who is basically doing like an Eartha Kitt impression.
What's up with her? One week she sounds like Jada Pinkett, then the next week she's like, hey, Gordon, good to see you, baby. Yeah. I'm like, what? Why are you?
Hey,
what?
Hey, you know what would have actually been interesting? What if she actually was Eartha Kitt? What if she actually was like that black Catwoman from the old TV show? Older and now like a crime boss.
See, that would be cool, but they're not thinking on that level because they don't read comics. In fact, they didn't even watch the old Batman show. The way,
you know? I mean, how much cooler would that be if Selina Kyle was like that? That would be awesome.
Maybe they're going in that direction. We don't know yet.
Maybe
we'll find out that how Selina gets her outfit is in Fish Mooney's closet.
I don't know.
I'm giving them credit. I'm just saying. That's what I would do. You know, I mean, there's ways to get. And I didn't like the fact that Selina just happened to be there when the Waynes got shot.
No.
Because that flies in the face of everything we've ever learned about the Batman murder. I mean, the Waynes murder. You know, and it was supposed to happen. No one saw it except for Bruce and Joe Chill. They're the last ones left.
Right.
You know, there's no one else.
Right.
Like, what kind of nonsense is that? But, you know, again, you know what it is? The guy who plays the Penguin is the saving grace of that show. I don't know. I don't have his name in front of me. But
I think it's like Robin Lord Taylor or something.
Yeah, there you go. That dude is amazing. He is magnetic. He is as good as Danny DeVito was in Batman Returns. And that's giving him incredible credit. Because I could, when I looked at him and I saw his sniveling behavior, and underneath that was a willingness to do anything, the only character they've gotten right so far has been the Penguin, in my opinion. Because when he's on screen, I'm like, well, I want to see what he's going to do next.
Yeah, you know, he's going to, like, kill someone and not get any blood on him. That's what he's
doing. Yeah, well, when you stab somebody with bottles and you emerge with no blood, I mean, that's amazing. But I mean, not that I've stabbed somebody with a broken bottle, but I can imagine.
Must be some kind of Penguin powers or something. Okay, last two complaints about the show, and then I'm gonna shut up. No. You reminded me of a couple things I didn't say. Okay, two things. First of all, I think that this implication that Renee Montoya has had a relationship
with Barbara Gordon
is stupid and unnecessary. Yeah. I also hate Barbara's apartment and the fact that Jim Gordon is living in some Gotham penthouse. I think it completely undercuts so many interesting things about the character, who's supposed to be like this working class cop from Chicago, and now he's living in, you know, in some penthouse with a, you know, with where he
can see, fashion model.
right, with a model, you know, looking out on this, you know, this immaculate view of the city. That's the first thing.
Isn't that supposed to be the Birds of Prey penthouse, though? Isn't that the end joke?
Yeah, but it's like, maybe, but again, it's like an end joke that doesn't make any sense, because
I agree. I'm just saying, that's what I read.
Gordon is not Batgirl, unless maybe they're going to completely, you know, like, maybe they'll do Batgirl before they even do Batman. While Batman is still, like, in high school, they'll have Barbara Gordon, you know, dressed up as, like, model Batgirl out there fighting criminals. Okay, the second complaint is something very specific. In the Balloon Man episode, they had this, no, listen, see, you know,
I know
how,
where you're going,
know how,
go ahead,
you know
go ahead,
how
I'm
stupid
sorry,
that
ahead.
Sounds? You know how stupid that just sounds? Yeah, in the Balloon Man episode. So in the Balloon Man episode, there's this scene where, you know, like, the Balloon Man is attaching crooked cops and
yes,
whatever.
And
he's
floating them up, yes.
Attaching people to balloons and they're floating away, which is stupid, but whatever. So they have this scene and it's basically like a reporter, interviewing a bunch of like quote unquote like ethnic bystanders. It's a bunch of like brown people, like the most brown people I think that have been in any frame of the show past, you know, Jada Pinkett being in it. And these people are basically out on the street, you know, basically like lodging their support for the Balloon Man because he's taking on corrupt.
He's taking on. Remember that line from The Dark Knight Returns? I sure hope he goes after the homos next.
Right. Like, wait, what? So there's this line. There's this brother. And the dude actually says this, like, I almost, like, this was the last episode that I watched, and this probably had a big reason, you know, this was probably a big reason why. This brother gets on the microphone with the reporter, and he says, like, in the most, like, stereotypically ethnic kind of, you know, dialect, he says, "The Balloon Man is gonna get you." And I was like,
yes.
And I was like, turn this shit off. So bro, you contrast something like that with like the rich and developed and real character of John Diggle. Arrow.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm just gonna watch Arrow. That's the only thing I can do. I'm gonna keep watching Arrow. I'm gonna start watching The Flash, and I'm just gonna focus on that little corner of the DC universe and then just pretend that Gotham doesn't exist and hope like hell that it gets better, because right now I just, you know, I can't do it.
Here's my question. Why did they change Sue Essen from a blonde lady to a vaguely Hispanic lady? I'm trying to figure, like, that change was very strange to me. And for those who might not be aware, we're talking about the woman that Jim Gordon had an affair with back in the year one graphic novel.
Yeah, while his wife was pregnant.
Right. That's his boss now, who the Hispanic lady. Right. That's Sue Essen. And I thought to myself, why didn't they just create a new Hispanic character instead of using Sue Essen, who could be a major thorn a major monkey right. wrench in the drama later,
and basically positioning her in a spot where she it's unbelievable that her and Jim Gordon would ever get together ever exactly. right now. You know, I believe that they could have actually had Sarah be Hispanic, but that character should have still been in a position to ultimately, you know, get in the middle of Jim's relationship with Barbara. But the way that they have it framed now, basically what they did was they flipped it. They're like, oh, okay, I know what to do. Let's put Renee Montoya in the middle of Jim and Barbara's relationship. Like, let's give Barbara, like, the old flame that, you know, keeps popping up and, you know, ruining things and, you know, setting Jim up so he'll have to move out of his nice penthouse, you know, someday in season 3, you know, when Renee comes back into the picture and takes Barbara away from him. Which, you know, I, on the face of it, I don't think is a terrible idea, but I just think it's a terrible idea to insert Renee Montoya into the right. middle of that, because I think the character is far more interesting. I think that, you know, to basically someone who's actually read Gotham Central and loves Gotham Central, the least interesting thing about Renee Montoya is that she's right. gay. And right. they've basically made that like her defining characteristic. It's like, oh, well, you know, I think Renee is gay and maybe Barbara was once gay too. And it's like, no, get out of here with that stuff. That's, you know, come on. That's outrageous. That was the least interesting thing about Renee Montoya from right. those comics. And they took that and made that, you know, her defining characteristic.
Which is lazy, because that's not really an issue anymore.
No, it's not an issue. Even when it was happening in the book, it wasn't an issue for everyone. I mean, it wasn't right. an issue from her partner. It's like, does Chris Allen have a family? I mean, what? I just don't understand why. To me, those characters didn't even, like, Chris and Renee and Edward Nygma, none of those characters should have even appeared in the pilot. To me, they should have introduced Chris and Renee in the second episode when they show up investigating Jim for, you know, fake killing the Penguin. Like, to me, that would have been a more interesting way to introduce them, instead of just having them be kind of like these grouchy guys over in the corner. And then it's like, oh, yeah, you know, we're going to take down Jim Gordon. I just think that a lot of the storytelling kind of tweaks and alterations they made are just, you know, they're just uninteresting. I mean, they just are. To me, it's like, if Jada Pinkett was gonna play Fish Mooney as Eartha Kitt, then they should have just made her fucking Eartha Kitt. I mean, to me,
what was the Eartha Kitt Catwoman's real name?
I don't know. I don't know that. I don't know if they ever gave the two characters different names in the old TV show. I would have to go back and dig and see. But I think they were just Catwoman. I don't know whether she was ever Selina Kyle in Eartha Kitt's interpretation or was it Julie Newmar?
Yeah, Julie Newmar, I believe, was the first one. Uh-huh. Then it was Lee Merriweather, mm-hmm. and then I think the last one was Eartha Kitt. Mm-hmm. Right, I believe so, off the top of my head.
Yeah. So I mean, I don't know. I'm not feeling it right now. And you know, I decided some years ago, like, I'm not gonna do a Smallville. You know, I'm not just gonna watch a show and complain about it and hate on it, but keep watching it, which is basically kind of a standard MO for a lot of comics fans, to keep buying shit that you hate and complaining about it. So,
right,
you
exactly.
know, I'm putting my money or my DVR where my mouth is, and, you know, I don't like the show right now, so I'm going to stop watching it, and I'm going to, you know, keep watching Arrow and loving that, because I enjoy it. I think it's done well, and that's just kind of it.
And on a very bright note, I want to say, please, please go see Dear White People, the new film by first-time writer-director Justin Simien. It's in limited release right now. It came out last Friday in limited release, which basically means New York and Los Angeles.
And LA.
And I think it might be playing in Chicago and D.C. and Atlanta, but once again, it's extremely limited release. However, on October 24th, it is getting a nationwide release, and based on how much money it made just playing in 11 theaters, it looks to be a very mid it's going to be a mid-range hit, but what it'll do is let Hollywood know once again that not all blacks want to see Tyler Perry movies. Dear White People is sort of a logical extension of the universe created in Different World and Spike Lee's School Days, in the sense that you're dealing with the struggles and thoughts and fears of black college students, but this time we're in a predominantly white campus. Now, the last movie about blacks on a predominantly white campus was John Singleton's Higher Learning, which didn't do a good job of really showing what it's like. It turned into a race war with guns and shootings right. at the end.
So
and
there's no snipers in Dear White
There's
people?
Absolutely no sniping. Okay. As somebody, and I'm speaking to myself, I went to three colleges in my life, and two of them were predominantly white. And sitting in the audience watching that film, it really did take me back to a lot of the things I went through as a black student on a predominantly white campus. And I'll give a really quick review that does not have spoilers in it. And what I'll say is this. Dear White People is not anti-white. It is not in any way criticizing white America. What it's really about is how can black kids find a sense of self in a place that does not recognize their humanity. It does it in a very funny, unexpected, and hilariously inappropriate way. So when you see the film, don't go into it with your defenses up. Don't assume there's no ghetto nonsense in it whatsoever. There's no Uncle Tom foolery in it. There's no coonery in it. It's dealing with real black people's and real black people's ideas and thoughts and feelings. For that alone, it is worth the price of admission. Already today, which is October 20th, I've gotten into long arguments on Facebook with other black folks who are complaining about the film without even seeing it. They're going by the title. Do you know how many people on Facebook today told me, I don't want to see that movie because I didn't like the title? Guess what? There's a show on TV right now on ABC on Wednesday nights called Black-ish. I don't like that title, but that I'll be damned if that's not one of the funniest black sitcoms I've ever seen so far. So please, folks, stop judging books by their title. Okay? Check out Dear White People. You will not be disappointed. Just give it a chance. This goes back to our very first episode. Give stuff a chance. Stop discounting.
You have to buy it.
You've got to buy. Movies like this need you to show up in the theater, not buying bootlegs on a corner,
right.
Not waiting for DVR sales or DVR rentals or DVD sales. No, Dear White People need you to go see it in the theater because all Hollywood cares about is the first goddamn weekend box office receipts. The movie can make no more money after the first week, but if the first week you can say it opened number one, God damn it. It's going to open some doors, folks. And I wish I could beam this into every black community on the North American continent, if not the world. But folks, stop supporting the wrong nonsense. Here is a movie by a black man who is college educated, who wanted to put his experience on screen. It deals with things that black kids, every black student who ever went to a white college, that I know of can relate to this film. Even if you didn't go to college or if you went to a historically black college, this film has something for you. It's really about who we are and how have we, like the question, and this is a question I ask myself. When I was in college, I became an angry black man because I was surrounded by racism. But what if I ignored the racism? Who would I have been? All those years of being angry at white people didn't do a goddamn thing for me on my career. It did nothing. So maybe I would have been a better person if I had just shrugged off the racism. And that film really gets into the heart of that. And this is something that I think black folks in the United States really need to ask themselves. Who are we really? Because I feel like African Americans have defined themselves against white racism for so long that we might not have an identity that's not based on us fighting against white racism. That's a serious psychological question. It's almost like, you know, Batman's villains. Do Batman's villains exist because Batman exists? Would they not exist if Batman did not exist? You know, same thing with racism in the U.S. Like, do black people only exist because of white racism? You know? Like, that's serious stuff. But my bottom line, go see Dear White People. Trust me, you're going to love it. And that's that.
All right.
That's all I have to say about that. Because I just got angry today about all these arguments on Facebook. And I'm like, God damn it, people. Come on. Yeah, these same folks are going to camp out to get Avengers 2 tickets and Batman v Superman tickets, but they want to trash a black film made by an intelligent black filmmaker. I'm like, without even seeing it. You know? Like, come on, people. Come on. Anyway.
All right, y'all. On that note, we are going to sign off. Hope you enjoyed this installment. We thank you for stopping by.
Absolutely.
Support us. Thanks for the support. Share it. Send it out there. And we'll see you next time. All right? Peace.
Take care.